processes for their chances of overcoming alcoholism and surviving it and living a good life. So this is a place that I absolutely love to come to. Now Scott is a really good friend of mine. One of the things that's two of the things that are extraordinary about Scott is every once in a while you're going to find somebody that's going to put a lot more into their recovery world and life than the bare minimum. They're going to really go for it, and Scott has. It's not just his recovery world, but what the things that he does for a living are all about offering addicts and alcoholics a better chance at life and at recovery. And the other thing that's extraordinary about him is there's a promise in the book Alcoholics Anonymous that says we absolutely insist upon enjoying life. And I don't know anybody who does it better than Scott. If you follow his Facebook page, if he's not in Italy one week, he's in Machu Picchu the next, or you know, in Australia or Hawaii. I've never seen anything like it. He is definitely enjoying life, and I'm really looking forward to hearing him speak. Come on up here, Scott.
Chris, my name is Scott Fleming. I'm a recovered alcoholic. Thank you very much, Benchmark, for having me. Thank you, Marcia and Jonathan, for this kind invitation. It means so much. And thank you for the dinner last night. I was out with some amazing people, some heroes of mine in Alcoholics Anonymous, who a lot of them are in the room tonight. You know, and I'm not nervous at all. You know, I got some of my heroes here in AA, and I got my mother and my sister and her friend Delana, who's never heard me speak. So I'm not nervous at all. Could we bring the President of the United States in here, or Bill Wilson? Might as well just go for it. My sobriety day, February 13th, 2002. Haven't had a drink in over 10 and a half years. Haven't wanted a drink in 10 years. That's a miracle for a guy like me. Like Chris was just talking about, I'm truly blessed in here. And anything good in my life that I talk about tonight is not way to go Scott. It's way to go Alcoholics Anonymous and way to go God. Now, I had good things around me my whole life that were instilled in me, like my family I'll talk about, but I never could live those things. I never had the power to do that. They will come out later on. You know, and I love my family for that, as I took the 12 steps. But I was in, I ended up in Nice, France, and I went to a meeting. I go to a meeting everywhere I go, and I go in there and they ask me to speak. I was from out of town, and I told them where I was from, and they said, oh, there's two guys from Philly outside. And I sat there, and this has happened to me before, and in walks my good friend, who I've been seeing in 5 years from my home group, John. I said, John, he goes, Scott, what are you doing here? So, you know, we're hugging, and now John had almost 20 years, and his daughter, he says she hung herself. And I don't know if that's the truth, but it was, I heard she might have OD'd, and John could not reconcile that with God, and John picked up a drink. And he went on a 4.5 year run, and John has more money than anybody I've ever met. And John was 9 weeks sober when I saw him, fresh skinned and glowing. You know, and there was another, and I spoke, and there was a kid in there who had one day. He was from Finland. He walked into the Helsinki airport and said, I want to go where the next flight's going. And they said, he's going to Nice. And he said, I'll take it. And he was going to do a Leaving Las Vegas thing where he's flying there to drink himself to death. And within 2 weeks, this happened two weeks prior to me in the meeting that night, he was in three hospitals, got mugged, was arrested, and hit his bottom and found AA online and walked into that meeting. And I got to share a message of hope about what you guys did for me. And then we had a meeting obviously the next, or that night, you know, at the E, and we hung out with him. The next day we called a lunch meeting, impromptu, you know, and we got him on a plane that night, and I got to spend all day with him. And I got to sit on a beach in Nice, France, talking about my life and how good it is, and talk about what God has done for me and what you people have done for me. And give this guy maybe a little bit of hope. And then I sent him off, and then we started to Skype. And he just booked a flight. He's flying next Friday to come live in our area because he can't find the enthusiasm he found that night in Nice, and he asked me to sponsor him. What an honor. And I tell that story for a couple reasons. Number one, I can't believe I was in Nice, France. I was never able to do those things. I can't believe that I had something to offer another human being sitting on a beach talking about how good my life is and maybe he got some hope. I can't believe that he asked me to sponsor him. You know, and that's not the guy I was when I showed up here. I had nothing to offer anybody. And I come from a wonderful family. My mother and father are the most non-judgmental people I ever met. And I love them for that. Never heard them say a bad word about another human being. You know, and I grew up and I had a brother. You know the way my alcoholism manifested itself before I picked up a drink? The way it showed up in my life? And how I know that I have this underlying thing we call self-centered fear? Was that when my brother was born, a year and a half younger, I remember doing everything I could to take the attention off him and putting him down and being abusive. Going way past the sibling rivalry thing. You know, and I carried that guilt and shame for a long time. You know, because I never felt like I measured up. Even though I had great things around me and the support and everything I needed, I never felt like I measured up, so I'd have to put him down to make myself feel better. And that's my problem. I like to feel superior over people. And I would go through life compensating to do that. I was always threatened when I was around you, and I would have to either feel like I was better than, or I'd have to leave and find people that I thought I was, or smarter than, or whatever the case may be. And around the age of 13 or 14, alcohol found me, like it does anybody, and it hit my lips. And I was transformed. I would never be the same person again. My life was changed forever right there. And I could not wait to drink again. I didn't drink every moment from that day on because I was young. I couldn't get it. But I can tell you this, that alcohol became the most important thing in my life from that moment on. I could not stop thinking about it. When are we going to get it again? How are we going to get it again? Get the older guys to get it. And my whole life was playing around and everything else became background noise. And I was off to the races. And I felt like I became, you know, everything I ever wanted. I was a popular kid. I could talk to the girls now because alcohol gave me the courage to do that. I could hang out with the guys. And I felt like I was on top of the world. And at 18 years old, I was flown down I went down to North Carolina to play tennis in front of a coach who was going to offer me some scholarship money. You know, and I ended up going down there. And in the summer before I go down there, I get arrested. And I got about 5 charges against me. Now, I know my mom and my father, they already knew there was a problem with alcohol. But there's no way I'm letting you take away the one thing that makes me feel comfortable in my own skin at 18 years old. No way. But I figured I want to go to this school and I'll appease my mom and dad. I'll go into rehab with no real thoughts of stopping drinking. I go into rehab in my area. And as I'm in there, I'm listening to these old men and I can hear the shame, the remorse. It was palpable. They were talking about how they haven't seen their kids in 20 years. Their mother and father passed away before they got to see them do anything with their life. They've lost education, career, opportunities. They gave them all away. I didn't want to end up like that. And I knew that I drank like they did. I could see it. And I saw it. And I said to myself, I'm not going to drink anymore. I'm going to go away to school and take advantage of this to play tennis. I'm going to get an education. I'm going to have a career, make my mother and father proud. And I set off to do that. And I didn't drink for 29 days. And the 30th day is when my parents dropped me off of college and they drove away. And I didn't know I had no defense against alcohol. I really thought I was not going to drink. And the kids asked me, when the tennis team came up that night, and they asked me the wrong question, much like they did it to Roland Hazard in Paris. When they said, do you want some wine with that dinner? After he's been young for a year, didn't want to drink. And I said, yeah, give me a 6-pack of Bud Pounders, like Hazard did. And they came back, and I put it to my lips, and my eyes watered up, and I got that feeling in my head, and I thought, what was I doing not drinking for 29 days? This is the best feeling in the world. And I was off to the races. A year and a half, never played one match of tennis. Now, the last semester, could not go to school. None. Alcohol, the cruel part of alcoholism is starting to happen to me, where it's not working anymore. Where before it made me feel social and connected to the universe and fit in and all those things, is now I'm becoming antisocial. I'm getting into fights. No one wants to be my roommate at college. I think it's everybody else's fault. I'm more confused, more alone, more afraid than I've ever been. 19 and a half years old. Like I said, great parents. They fly me home and try to get me help. I didn't think I needed help. I would just get away from the college campus because that was the problem. And I enrolled in the community college. I would have been the number one tennis player there. They have a really good team. They go to nationals every year. I gave that opportunity away. And for the next 10 years, I lived a meaningless, purposeless life. I could paint you war stories about being locked up or, you know, being arrested and this and that. It all happened to me, but I don't think that's what matters. Because maybe yours were different, but I can tell you this. How I felt is I hated myself. I was alone. I wanted to die. I was confused, lost. And I'm going to talk a little bit about what happened. It's through my 20s, I remember taking my parents hostage. Going in and out of their home while they would see me dying in front of their eyes. Not really able to look them in their eyes, but yet feeling the, what's wrong with our son? And me having no answer to that. I was caught up in a progressive illness that had me by the throat, and I didn't know how to get out of it. And my sister, 10 years younger. I remember my brother and I, we wanted a sister. And I remember my parents told us that my mom was pregnant, she's going to have a girl. And we were so excited. I remember her being born. I remember teaching her how to ride a bike. And I remember walking to the bus stop with her and all that and wanting to be that big brother. And then I remember somehow being in this house in my 20s, being a monster, progressively getting worse, the alcoholism, and taking them hostage, you know, and being abusive. And I remember at the end, I could never hold apartments. I would get apartments, and I would get good jobs, and I would rise quickly, and then I would be let go from my drinking, and I would have the lights be turned off, and then the landlord knocking on my door saying, "You got to go. You didn't pay your rent or bills," and I could never hold an apartment. And I would bounce around from couch to couch with friends, and I had a hostage I had for 8 years. This girl who really cared about me. She really cared about me. I didn't care about her. I didn't know how to. I didn't know how to have a relationship until I met you. I know why today. It's because I was so self-centered. I couldn't. I didn't know that then, but I took advantage of her, and she would always take me back in and say, "You could sleep here for a month until you get your stuff together." And I remember at the very end, talking to my parents again, crying. I have nowhere to go. Been evicted again. You can have a couple weeks on the couch. You got to work, though. I couldn't work at the end, really. It was hard to hold a job. Couldn't function. My cousin gave me a job, and then real quickly I learned the business, and I started this business. Very simple thing. And I did very well for a short period of time. And then the guy that was giving me all the work came to me one day and said, "I'm not giving you any more work." Now I had trucks, I had leases, I had employees, and I was done. You know, and I had nothing left, basically. And I remember driving around in my little car, crying out to God, "Please help." And that rehab came to mind. It came to mind a lot in my 20s, but the pain wasn't great enough. And this time it wasn't. I called the rehab, and I went into outpatient because that's what I wanted. To give me intensive outpatient. And I'm going there 4 to 9, and I'm feeling safe because I'm shot at and I'm hit. I'm hurting from booze. And there was one problem, though. They said you had to make meetings. But I didn't want to come to Alcoholics Anonymous or any meetings because I thought I already knew what you guys were about. There's a bunch of old guys hanging on real tight to your chairs. If you sit through and make it through the day, you're a winner without a drink. And I didn't sound like any fun to me. And I couldn't imagine being around a bunch of people without drinking anyway. But the counselor, after about a week, asked me to stay after. And he said, "Scott, if you want to be a part of this group, you have to go to meetings." So I was nudged into Alcoholics Anonymous. And I walked into the Greater Levittown Groups of AA in Levittown. And I sat on the back wall, and there was a man named Larry speaking. And I listened to him. And he had about 12 or 13 years, and he sounded relatively happy. And he drank like I did. And most importantly, is I believed him. And I went after the meeting, I couldn't. They shook my hand because I was a new guy, and I felt like I was home. And I fell in love with the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous from the moment I walked in these doors. That's just my experience. I haven't fallen out of love with it. In fact, I walked out that door and walked down that handicap ramp, thinking I can't wait to come back tomorrow. And there was a guy walking up. I'll never forget Frank, who in and out for all these years, saying, "I hate these meetings, but if I come, I guess I won't have to drink." And I came back to AA every day. Every single day. My home group was a clubhouse. Meetings at 9, noon, 5:30, 8, and midnight. And I would come. I wasn't working at the time. I'd come to the meetings. I'd come early, stay late. I listened to the speaker. I got involved. I made coffee. I set up chairs. I did whatever the home group asked me to do. I actually became the intergroup rep within 3 months of being in service. I'm in service, right? I'm in service. I'm chairing meetings. I'm speaking. I got a pocket full of guys' numbers. Guys' numbers. And we're going out to the diners afterwards. And we're talking about the wonderful things we hear in meetings and how our lives might change. And we had so much hope. And I don't know what your dreams are, but I have them. And I've always had them. Some of them are, I've always wanted to be a good son, a good friend, a good guy, a good student. And I never could, a good brother. I could never pull that off. Other dreams I've always had was, I've always wanted to travel. Since I can remember, I've always wanted to explore and see the world. I watched my mom, who helped inspire me that, but she would travel the world. She's a teacher, and she would save her money and travel the world with her teacher friend. And they would bring back all these pictures. And I remember my brother even went with her once. And I remember being so envious. And I remember being envious of anybody who had success in their life. Because I couldn't do it. I couldn't get off the bar stool. I was too afraid to live. I never went anywhere. Never left my hometown. And I watched my mother travel, and I could not do that. And dreams real quickly came true for me in here while I am doing what you're saying in the fellowship. I did everything. I even left the females alone. There was men in there. I'm starting to realize this. I'm starting to notice there are females in AA. At 10 years sober, I did everything you guys said to do except for 12 things. And my life got so good around me so quick, it's ridiculous. My brother, the hostage who cut me off 6 months early, calls me up. She wouldn't answer my calls, knocking on her door. I couldn't believe she did that. She called me up. I heard you're 2 months sober. Yeah, I'm going, hey, I want to see. And I ran off, made that fake amends that I had to go back to her later on when I got to step eight, and you know, I knew what I did to her. But she's calling me. My brother, oh, my mother and father, they want me to live with them. I think they still want me to live with them, you know. I'm like the hero in the family, you know. They're showing me off because my skin's looking better and my eyes looking better, and the family wants me around now. And my brother, who I watched travel the world and travel this country, calls me up around 5 months sober and says, why don't we go to Ireland? Right now I'm saving money. That business, by the way, I got a second chance at that. The guy was in AA, and he gave me a second chance. So now I'm saving my money. I'm living at home. And I said, yeah, I have money in the bank. And our clubhouse had a closet with a meeting list of all the meetings in Ireland. I thought that was a sign to go. So we planned this trip. And I fly to Shannon. 6 months sober, I get off, 10-day trip. And I realized right away it was going to be hard. Second day, I'm looking over the ring of curry thinking, why can't I have a few beers with my brother? Why can't I? Third day in, I make a conscious decision. I'm drinking before this is over. Now I'm making meetings over there too. Fourth day, and I end up in a restaurant / pub. My brother orders a beer, and I want to drink so bad it hurts. And I would have drank if it wasn't for my brother. But I couldn't do that to him. I had put him through enough abuse, and he knew I was an Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said to him, I had heard in the fellowship of AA, at some point in your sobriety, the only thing between you and a drink will be God. And I didn't know what that meant. I didn't want to know what that meant. I didn't want anything to do with God. And I said to my brother, I got to get out of here, Will. And we left that restaurant. And I went into my bed and breakfast. And I went into the bathroom and I closed the door and I put a towel down the crack of the door. And I got on my knees for the first time in my life. And I said, God, I want to drink, but I don't want to drink. Please help me. And I didn't drink. But what's more is I didn't want to drink after that moment. And that's different for a guy like me, because when the moment hit my lips at 13 years old, I couldn't stop thinking about it. Alcohol called me. I went. My mouth watered. I couldn't wait to be around it. Even in my late 20s, when I hated drinking. I despised it. I remember walking into the bar crying my eyes out like a baby because I didn't want to go. But I had to. And I had to wipe my tears off and walk into that bar. So I knew something happened. And I even flew to Glasgow on my own and went to the city of Edinburgh. He had already been there, so he went down to Dublin and spent more time. And I'm walking around the streets of Edinburgh, Scotland, and the bar lights were flashing, which to me are the most attractive things in the world. And there was no pool. There was no I wish I could. And I flew back to Dublin and met my brother up, and I'm on the flight home, and now I'm interested in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I had a book, wasn't doing anything with it. And there was a man trying to sponsor me in those 6 months. I wasn't letting him. But there was another man who, when he walked in these doors, I was attracted to him. But I was afraid of him at the same time. When he spoke, it came from somewhere deep. In his eyes, he had something that I haven't seen before. He walked smooth. After the meeting, he would sit with new guys, and they would be around him. He was engaged with them, and I knew he wanted to be there with them. And I didn't know what that was about, but I was curious. And he had worked with one of my friends who was way worse than me, and I watched him get better in front of my eyes. I opened up the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous on that plane, and the first chapter I saw was We Agnostics. And the first lines my eyes hit were either God's everything or he's nothing, either is or isn't, what's your choice to be. And I knew he was. And I knew I would be okay for the rest of my life if I depended on God. And that's all I ever really wanted, was to feel okay. Alcohol came close, but it wasn't real. And this was real, and I knew it with everything in my being. And this other thought came to me, this intuitive thought or this inspirational thought. It said, Scott, when you get off the plane, go see that man that you were attracted to when you walked in, but you were afraid of him at the same time. Because I knew he could see right through me, and I wasn't doing any of your work. And if you got to know me, you wouldn't like me. And I was ashamed, and I wasn't worthy. But I knew I had to go see him. So what did I do is I went back to my home group. And after about a week or two, I just kind of moved myself closer to him in the meeting. And I was sitting right next to him. One day he said, do you want me to sponsor you or something? I said, John, I never thought you'd ask, you know? It's like asking another man to be your Valentine. That is not easy. And my journey began. My spiritual journey began. See, I thought I was getting better because I was getting more sober physically, I thought, in here. And I wasn't. I was living a dream in Ireland with not a worry in the world. And I wanted to drink worse than I ever did in my life. So I knew. And I sat down with this guy. And I was afraid and I was in doubt. But I trusted him a little bit. And I let this man guide me down this path. And I entered a process that I'm still in today. And I learned more in a few hours with him about what I was up against than I did in going to meetings around the clock for 6 months, loving AA, listening. One alcoholic with another. He was armed with the facts. And I started to do things I didn't think were a good idea, like get on my knees with him and do a third step. It seems to me like a weakness. You know, and I didn't feel comfortable doing it, but I did it. And that's what's great for a guy like me. Fourth step does not look like a good idea. He told me, what'd you do in the third step, Scott? Say a prayer and see what happens. And I asked God for the courage to write my fourth, and my pen never stopped moving for 2 hours in my parents' dining room. And my fourth was done. Done. And I called my sponsor to get it out. I said, I want to do that fifth, you know? And he laughed because he knew the power of God. And he said, let's meet in the park next weekend. And I go and I meet him at the home group. And I, for a moment, thought, you know what? It's probably not a good idea. Maybe I can get out of here now. But I didn't. I stayed. And I went to this park with this man. And I got spiritually naked in front of God and this man for the first time in my life. I looked at the truth about me. And I could see that why my life was a failure. And he showed me things on this fourth step that I couldn't see on my own. And he showed me that I like to feel superior over people. And that I'm not. I'm just one of. He showed me how I am dishonest. And I've been dishonest from the day I was born. I would exaggerate, make stories up. I would lie for you to think I was something I wasn't, to get your attention, your approval. And I could see it. I saw how I ran. I was so afraid because I relied on me and there was no higher power of God. I saw how resentments were fatal and futile. He showed me. And that I have to forgive if I want to be forgiven. We had a nice long talk. On the way out of the park, you know what he said to me? He said, I'm a human being. I'm here if you need me, but I'm fallible. God's infallible, all powerful, infinite knowledge and wisdom. That's the most important relationship you have, Scott. I could drink tomorrow. It's what Sam Shoemaker told Bill Wilson when talking about sponsorship. Sam said, when you see the man with the problem, put his hand and hand him who has all the answers. Then go home. Don't stick around and play God. And that's what he did. He set me on my own 2 feet and told me to take that hour. And I went home and I took the hour and I did the formal things the book says to do. Like, God, thank you. I know you better from the bottom of my heart. I looked over the first 5 steps, the proposal. I did as best I could. And I reflected on my life and I reflected about what we talked about in that park. And somewhere in that hour in my parents' Florida room there, in a moment, it hit me. The presence of God hit me like I've never felt before, and it's hard to describe. And I knew that alcohol was no longer the answer for me, and God wasn't. I haven't wanted to drink since. I was given a peace at my core in that moment that hasn't left me from that moment to this, no matter what happens in life. I knew I was forgiven by God in that moment. I had a clean slate. I had more work to do, and I still do today. But I had started to take responsibility for the harms I did my whole life and look at them. And I was prepared to go about and fix them. And I knew God forgave me. And the shame melted away, and I haven't felt shame since. And Alcoholics Anonymous worked in my heart that day, that moment. It was no longer neck up. It went right here. And here's one thing that here's some words that you'll never hear out of my sponsor's mouth, nor have you in the past. Who are you helping? Because when it enters here, I find there's an overwhelming desire to give it away. There's not one without the other. And Alcoholics Anonymous, I knew they told me the truth. And I left that day with a little something extra. I left that day with, I think, purpose. Here's how the fifth step promises express themselves in my life. I went to a meeting that night, and I was looking at my friend Elena, who came in a couple months after me. She's still sober today. And for the first time in my life, I was looking at another human being's eyes. I didn't want to leave them. Before that, my whole life, if I had to be in your eyes, I was very uncomfortable. I would hang my head around you. Probably because I was so dishonest and so ashamed. And I was clean. And on the way home, I took this guy Bill home, who I had been trying to help for 6 months in AA with whatever I had. What did I have? Maybe a little more money than him, a car. So I'd taken the meetings to buy him, but that's all I had. Now I had something extra. And all I said was, Bill, do you have a sponsor on the way home? And he said, yeah, you. And I said, Bill, I'll take you as far as I can. And the next day, Bill and I were talking a little bit about our history, and we were looking at steps 1, 2, and 3. And we were on our knees together. And 2 weeks later, I'm in a park with Bill, listening to his fifth step. What an honor to listen to another man's fifth step. What an honor. As I left that park, tears came rolling down my cheeks because for the first time in my life, I was unconditionally in love with another human being. I would have given up as much time as it took for Bill to know God's real, for him to know he's forgiven, for the shame to melt away. I would have spent as much time as it took for Bill to have a purpose, much like I did with him in the park that day. I would have given up anything that had been given to me materially. I had been given a lot at that point for Bill to know he never has to drink again. And that is my primary purpose. and that has been my primary purpose from that day to this. It's the only reason I come back to Alcoholics Anonymous. I haven't felt like I needed a meeting in 10 years. I love Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. I would be in here all day if I could. It's what Bill writes in A Vision for You. He says, although him and Bob know they have to do this in order to stay sober, that motive becomes secondary. It's transcended by a new motive. The way I feel when I'm being of use to others. And I set off I had hard amends. Now, for some reason, for me, the easy ones were like the money. I had money. I was making money. I was paying. I stole my father's tools, and I had to go down while living. I said, I'm down the one that ripped off all your power tools. You know, I ripped them all off to go drink mugs of beer at the Edgeley Inn. You know, and he next day he came and forgave me. So this is the money. I had to get that money out of my hands and other people's, and I did that. I drove around in like cheap cars while I did that. But the hard ones for me were the personal ones. But you know what? Like my brother. But you know what happened? Bill was catching up to me. And I had him on step eight. And I cared enough about Bill to stay one step ahead. So I prayed for the wilderness. And I prayed for the wilderness. And you know what happened? It was time to go see my brother. And I sat with my brother and I made that honest, sincere, tearful amends that I wasn't the big brother I should have been. That I was horrible to you. I treated you poorly. And I don't know why you don't hate me. You know, and my brother stood up afterwards and made a nice, long conversation. He said, you know what? I forgive you. He said, I don't know if I could ever be as honest as you were right there. You know, and I admire my brother for the way he lives and for him not to hate me. And you know what? I was probably at that point, you know, I don't know, 9 months sober. And I wasn't hurting him for 9 months, but I had no relationship with him until I looked him in the eye and took responsibility for that. And on the way home, I knew I had a relationship with my brother that had started. And my brother called me up a few months later and asked me to take him to the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. My brother's not an alcoholic, but he saw what AA did with me. And I sat down with my brother and I gave him, he knows more about the history than most people do in AA. He loves it. He is a history teacher. He would give me a history lesson on Sundays, and I'd take him through the steps of AA. And I listened to his fifth step. We trade. I listened to his fifth step where I made that initial direct amends. And he's very well adjusted to life, and he's a great guy, and he looked at it from a different angle. He saw that some of his little resentments where he was inconsiderate or afraid. But there was one name that went onto his eight-step list that he harmed, that he felt bad about, was Sarah, his ex-girlfriend from North Jersey from 12 years ago. Hasn't seen her since. Cheated on her and left her in a bad way. And I said to him, Will, someday you have to make it right. I didn't tell him to go find her because he's not going to drink and die if he doesn't. You know? So I get a text message a few months later, ran into Sarah at the Austin airport, made amends, incredible.
Wow.
My brother, I get on the phone, I'm like, what are you talking about? Scott, you're not going to believe this. He was visiting my sister in Austin. His flight got delayed. He's walking through the Austin airport, and he locks eyes with the one girl on his eight-step list, Sarah. He's with his wife. She's with her brother. They go to bed at the same time. He said, I was prepared to do what I had to do. I made the amends, and she forgave me. He said, I've never had a more amazing experience in my life. He called my mother that night and said he physically felt different when he did that. I showed my brother how we live in 10, 11, and 12, because to me it's not about mechanics anymore. It's not about the form. It's about the force. It's about a dance with God, a way of living, a way of being. And I showed him how we do that in 10, 11, 12, and I sent him off to New Zealand. And I remember I visited him, I don't know how many months ago, in New Zealand, and we're sitting, and he's telling me how he already set up another amends, that he reacted poorly to his sister-in-law. And next week he's sitting with her to make the amends. You can see the damage it did with her and his son. He's working a program faster than I am. You know, and so this has enriched my brother's life and those around him. And to me, that's what the ninth step's all about. This ninth step goes out through the world. And it's what our book says is the ultimate target in here. To be of maximum use to God and my fellows. So I continue on these amends because the things of the Spirit become more important than the things of the world. And I make it a very important piece of business in my life to finish my whole list. And I go to my grandmother and I start spending time with my grandmother. I was never a grandson. And I'm hanging out with her, playing cards, doing whatever. She's 86 with a walker. And I would take her to Atlantic City because she liked to gamble. And she'd sit there all day. And I bring spiritual books and read them at the casinos. And I can only stand about an hour gambling. And on the way home one day, I said, Grandma, if you hit big, what would you do? Would you go to Vegas? She said, no, I wouldn't go to Vegas. I know exactly what I would do. I'd hire a driver to take me up to New England before I die and see the family and friends I have. But I know it will never happen. And now I'm living this, trying my best to live this way of life. And I'm making these financial amends. and opportunities are coming back to me. And I'm saving my money and being responsible with it. And I called my grandmother maybe 6 months up later. And I said, Grandma, remember that trip you were talking about? I want to do it for you, and I can do it. She said, what are you talking about? I said, that trip, you want to go up to... She's like, Scott, you won't have any fun. I'm old. I need my own room. It'll cost too much money. I don't have any money. I said, Grandma, listen to me. I want to do it for... I had to beg her, and she let me. And I picked my grandmother up, and we went up to New Hampshire. And I sat with her 91-year-old brother and her 84-year-old sister while they told stories all day. And I sat with her 86-year-old friend for a half a day while they cried and laughed and cried and laughed, and I cried and laughed. And I got, and they never thought they'd see each other. And I got to spend time with her other friends. We went to the church that she was a part of, where she ran and played. I got to get to know my grandmother better and my family better. You know, we even stopped at a nudist colony in Connecticut on the way home. You know, we had a blast. I think I told her I liked it a little too much because she asked me to take her to Wisconsin the following year. And we get home, and shortly after that, my grandmother falls ill and she passes away. And you know, the family came up to me and were telling me how she wouldn't stop showing them the pictures and how much that trip meant to her. You know, and they asked. I was honored to say a few words at her funeral. You know, I don't think I was one and around the family too much or had much to say. You know, not a few years before that. But what Alcoholics Anonymous did for me was allow me to be a part of my grandmother's last wish on earth. Thank you, AA. That's my favorite trip I've ever been on. That absolutely my favorite. That will go with me forever. I have a lot of cherry on top type stuff like Chris was talking about. That's okay to share about, but it's not. You know, that's not what it's about for me. But they happen. They happen to me. You know, that dream of traveling has come true and continues to come true. I've been to, I think, almost 40 countries in the last 7 years. 40. And 95% of that has been inside Alcoholics Anonymous. Whether I'm going to a convention or I'm in service somewhere, I had a chance to speak or whatever it may be, it's inside Alcoholics Anonymous. Not too long ago, a friend of mine in AA asked me to be the godfather of his son. And it was in Portugal, the ceremony, because his wife's from Moldova and the family lives in Portugal. And it's this big ceremony, crazy, this Moldovans. Ceremony where they throw the baby in the air. It's amazing. So, this is a good friend of mine in AA, you know, and I've traveled the world with him. And I fly to Madrid, you know, and I say, you know what, I want to go to Africa because I've never been to Africa and I've always wanted. So I go down into Morocco as a little side trip while I'm there. And I go into the Sahara Desert and I'm with the nomads on camels for 3 days sleeping under the stars. And my first day I'm in there, I'm sitting there, and there's a water state, you know, where you get water, and there's a Moroccan man with his wife coming through with his little baby, and we start to talk. Now it's very hard for me to talk about my life without talking about Alcoholics Anonymous because I owe you my life, and I wouldn't have a life without you, and so it most of the time gets in there, and he said, well, what's AA? And I begin to explain to him. And his wife looks up at me, and stares at me in the eyes, and says, is this like a change in consciousness thing? I said, yeah, that's what it's like. He looks up at me and he says, I can't stop drinking. I can stop 2 months and I drink again. It's killing my wife and my baby. Now, they don't have Alcoholics Anonymous there. He's never heard of it. And we get to talk about the first 3 steps in the Sahara Desert. And he gets it. And we get to exchange emails and be in contact. Now, I thought I was going there to be adventurous. And God sees fit to use me when I allow Him. You know, and this is the type of stuff that has happened to me over and over and over again that I absolutely just get to be an observer of and allow God to guide me. It's an incredible thing for a guy like me. About 5 years ago, I was sitting in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous in my home group, a noon meeting, and there was this guy in there sharing. He's sharing about how he's struggling with a drink, and his name's Haywood. He's got 8 months sober, and I heard what he said. And I went up to him and after, and I said, Haywood, I heard how you were struggling. I have answers if you want them. Here's my number. I said, please call me. We have, because he had to leave. And I said, we have a Monday night big book study that we go right out of the book a step a week. I'd love for you to come. About 150 people come. And he said, okay. He took my number and he left. And he called me back Monday. He said, Scott, you didn't think I was going to call you, did you? And I said, well, I wasn't sure, but I'm glad you did. He said, I want to go to that meeting. I said, all right, I'll pick you up. Picked him up, took him to the meeting. I love watching people in this meeting for the first time because they never hear anything like this. Their eyes are out wide. He's moving around. Afterwards, everyone's coming up and shaking his hand. I take him home. He says, where was I? I said, that was Alcoholics Anonymous out of the book. He said, I loved it. He said, would you be my sponsor? I said, I'd be honored to. And on the way home, I said, why don't we meet on Wednesday? We'll start the steps. He said, all right. He tells me he almost drank over the weekend. He had a pocket full of money. He was pacing around. I said, well, we better start the steps tomorrow. You know, so we meet tomorrow at noon, Tuesday. He walks in. We sit through the meeting together, and we go out to lunch. Now, at lunch, he tells me his whole life story. He just wanted to talk. He's been through so much stuff, abuse, tragedy, all the stuff that I'd never had to deal with. But I listened to him. And at the end, I buy him a meal. And he says, Scott, no one ever bought me a meal before. Thank you. And I said, it's not a big deal. It's a cheeseburger and fries. He said, no one ever bought me lunch before. He's 46 years old. I don't get it. So I take him back to my house. And at that time of my sobriety, it probably took me a couple hours to do some history of 1, 2, and 3. I've since changed a little bit. But he couldn't admit after 5 hours he was powerless. And he would at times want to talk to me, not analyze or intellectualize. He just wanted to open up. And I let him, and I listened, and I direct him back to the book. And at one point in there, he says, Scott, that reminds me of this poem called If. And he kept saying the line, the earth will be yours and everything that's in it, but what's more, you'll be a man, my son. Now, I never heard this poem, but I'm interested in these things now. And I Google it, and I print it up. Beautiful poem by Kipling. I come back, we start doing more step work. We're talking. He says, how could it be a God when all these horrible things happen to me? And I would say things like, maybe it wasn't God. Maybe that was people's self-will. Maybe that was, that, you know, and he said, okay, maybe. And we talk a little bit about 1 and 2, and I couldn't get him to admit his powerless. On the way home, I had to get him home. I had a commitment that night. He couldn't go to it. On the way home, I give him another example. He says, I see it. I'm powerless. I see it. And he's all excited. I said, good. We talk more about God. And we get to his front door, and I give him my big book because he didn't have one. And he goes up, and he says, Scott, before I drive away, I turn around, and he goes, thanks. I went, you're welcome, buddy. And he went in, and I drove home, and the next day, his roommate called me and said, Scott Haywood passed away in his sleep last night. He died of cardiac arrest. He said, I got to tell you, I've lived with him for, I think he said, 10, 12 years. I've never seen him this happy. He came home talking about how he loves his sponsor, how he loved that meeting he went to, how he can't wait to go to the B.B. King concert with you because I invited him there. I had tickets. He said, yeah, I have your big book here. He was reading it before he went to bed and praying. And a tear came down my cheek. Because I wanted this man to experience what we're doing here. The fullness of life, the freedom and the joy, the purpose that we're given. The gift of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he was robbed, I felt, of it. Then another tear came down my cheek because I realized the gift I'd been given. The last hours of this man's life, I got to buy him a meal. Listen to him. Be kind to him. Take him into my home. Surrender with him. Talk about God with him. And I called my sponsor right away. And at the time, it was John Bragg. And I said, John, thank you for what you gave me. Because, and he said, Scott, I don't think you ever have a more powerful experience than that. That's exactly what the guy needed to go on from here. And you know what? I said, John, thank you for telling me the truth about Alcoholics Anonymous and about this solution. Because, see, when Haywood was struggling in that meeting, I could have very easily said to him, don't drink, play the tape through, keep it green. I could have spit out a ton of slogans. But that's not what you guys gave me. You guys gave me way more than that to offer. I was able to go up to him and offer him a real solution if he wants it. If he wants it. And I thank my sponsor for that. And I'll tell you what, I was at the Las Vegas convention maybe 6 months later. And there was a woman speaker. And she was the main speaker. And what she said, the last thing she said was, I used to think that I should live life every day like it's my last day on earth. I don't think that anymore. I think I should live every day like it's your last day on earth. And I think that's what Alcoholics Anonymous, through the process of the 12 steps, is trying to get a guy like me to experience. Because my whole life, since I was born, I've been self-centered. A taker. What's in it for me? And it's trying to turn me around to be a giver. And see what I can do for you. And when I'm doing that, and not for this reason, but when I'm doing that, I don't experience anything like the joy I do in that. I've probably cried a handful or maybe a little more tears of pain in this 10.5 years, which I'll talk about in a minute. But I've cried hundreds of times just driving down the road in my car alone, or not alone, realizing the gift I've been given in here, that I'm free, I'm a free man, and I don't want to drink today. And that is what you guys have given me. And that poem, If, is framed above my office. Now, I continue to stay in the center of Alcoholics Anonymous from the moment I had that experience in my fifth step. I've never strayed, never took a vacation. When times are good or feel good or times feel bad, I'm here doing the same work. And I continue to sponsor guys. I continue to be sponsored. I continue to hang out with men and women that I look up to in Alcoholics Anonymous to learn from and listen to and inspire me. I've been blessed with that, by the way. Sometimes I cannot believe the people that God has put in my life. Truly humbled by it. And I continue to have commitments in my home group. I continue to show up in jails and institutions and all that because I want to. And because I have a debt to pay that I'll never be able to repay. But I'll tell you what, that if poem has comforted me more in my times of trials and tribulations, in the pain that I've experienced in here, than anything. And that was his gift for me. And that poem I understand more, much like our 12 steps, I understand more. It deepens and broadens as life unfolds for me. And I believe that, yes, I must grow spiritually by self-sacrifice and work with others. Yes, but also, as I apply these principles, when life unfolds in front of me and I have to handle situations that I've never had to handle before, and how am I going to react? Am I going to choose character or am I going to choose comfort? You know, and I continue to try to practice these principles in all my affairs. Obviously, I'm not perfect. Obviously, I have to keep growing along spiritual lines. I make mistakes. I get up. I ask God to help me do better. The most important thing I do in my day, and our founders talk about this, is daily morning prayer and meditation. I'm on my knees every day not asking God to help me stay sober. He already took that problem from me. I know exactly when He did. What I ask Him to do is help me be the man He wants me to be today. Help me to be kind, considerate, loving, giving, honest, tolerant, patient towards everybody I come across. Much like my sponsor showed me in a fifth step. He said, Scott, can you see why your life is a failure? He said, if you want success and you want to feel like you're connected to the universe and people want to be around you, you got to practice these principles which are the opposite of your character defects. And you got to ask God to help you with that. And I do that every single day, and I talk to God all day long. I have a relationship with Him. And that's the most important thing in my life. 2 years ago, after my life took off on the outside, because my life on the inside was good, and I'm traveling the world and experiencing things unbelievable, like being in Iceland with my mother and sister on a snowmobile on top of the glacier above the clouds, screaming, this is the best thing I ever did in my life, because I could never travel before, especially with my family. Except for, I remember thinking, well, the day before I was in England in a backyard barbecue with Clancy and four other people. One of my heroes in AA, and I got to talk for hours about the history of AA and Chuck Chamberlain and Bill Wilson, who I love these guys. Never met them, but I love them for what they did. I love people that love AA. So my life became amazing, and it is amazing. It's incredible. I can't believe it sometimes. But what happened was about 2 years ago, the storms of life, a little more than 2 years ago, storms of life showed up. About five things hit me that I've never had to deal with before. You know, and some of them caused resentment. One was I got in business with a really good friend of mine, best friend in AA. I was the best man at his wedding. And he basically, in my eyes, I saw the email. He stabbed me in the back and told lies about me to our lawyer. And he was very embarrassed when he knew I saw that. And he made some fake amends. And then I basically had to walk away, let all that money go and our friendship go. And for years, a year and a half in AA, I'm praying, I'm doing the disciplines. I'm on my knees saying, God, help me. I know He's a sick man. Help me be, not in a superior way, but I know He's, you know, how can I be helpful? All that stuff. And I thought I forgave, and there were times when I knew I didn't. I had a tough relationship where I bought a house with a girl, and I had to walk away and let that house go. That was very hard emotionally. I got sued in a federal court in a civil case. For a lot of money against my business for something I didn't do. A guy had a resentment against me. And I got let out a year and a half later after he financially hurt me. And I hung in there. And that wasn't anything. The next two things rocked me at once. Is if I was in San Antonio, I met a girl and I just fell head over heels. It happened to me. I wasn't looking for it. I fell head over heels. And if it was too late and my heart was already in the game, she came to me and told me, crying, that she doesn't have the amount of sober time she said she had. And I believe me, everything in me screamed, go fix this. Except for my sponsor's voice reaching in, you know, touching in here, what I knew I had to do, let her go and cut her off completely in a nice way. And it killed me. And the same time that happened, I floated in New Zealand, and I was like, I wasn't even there. I was in so much pain. I came back, and I remember I came back, and my right-hand man in business, I built a business for 9 years, blood, sweat, and tears around the clock. And I'm very fortunate in the business I'm in. It has a higher purpose, but it's also a business. And I had a right-hand man for 4 years working for me, and I trusted him. I was like a brother to him. I was his grand sponsor. And what happened was I get into my... we throw him a going-away party. He gave me his 2-week notice, and 150 people, and he was crying on me that on my shoulder that night. I said, "What's wrong? You scared to go?" "No, what's wrong? Nothing." He wouldn't tell me. Well, he leaves. The next day, I go to call him. His phone's cut off. I go on his Facebook account. It's deleted. I get into my QuickBooks account. I stopped counting at about $150,000 that he robbed. He probably did $250,000 worth of damage to that business. And I can tell you that I couldn't move for 2 days. I had one of my friends sitting on my couch. I couldn't even look at the computer. I didn't know where to begin. I didn't know if I had what it took to pick up the pieces. I had had the rebuilding business before. It's not easy. And I'll tell you this, though. I was able to forgive him in the moment. I really was. If he came in his door right now, I would hope he's doing good. I'd shake his hand, but I wouldn't let him around my wallet. But I know he's suffering. And I know he can't be free or sober until he fixes these things. But I can tell you this, I couldn't move for 2 days. I felt a pain that I had never felt, a broken heart and financially ruined and thought the business was going to be gone. I remember on the phone with my mom crying, on the phone with my sponsor crying. I was a 37-year-old man. The pride wanted to say, you should be okay, or don't tell them that you're hurting. And I had to let my friends carry me out. I learned about the first tradition in my life and my business. My friends picked me up and they carried me. And I talked to my, I was single for like a year in AA, talking to my sponsor about this. I felt ridiculous, but I knew it was what I had to do. And I wanted to embrace that pain, not run from it. I never wanted to drink. I never felt anything like that. I understand why people drink, by the way. I understand why they drink when I felt that pain. If I didn't do the 8 years of work that I had done and built that foundation, I would have been out of here. I was devastated. But I also found gratitude in that moment, in those times. Because what I found is joy, that I had been given the gift of life. That times are going to be hard. And times are going to feel wonderful. And through them all, I don't want to drink. It's a miracle. That's a miracle. And not only that, I've become stronger. I have more to offer because of what I went through. Because I hung in there and was honest and talked to my sponsor about it and faced that stuff. And continued to pray. And I prayed in a whole different way. I pray all the time, but I prayed like, "God, help me endure." He said, "We're going to switch the prayers up, Scott. Ask for endurance, you know, not comfort and all that." And I got closer to God. You know, and I really feel like I have more to offer. And you know what happened? People were putting my life sponsees since then, and I'm in my office or home with, and I know that they wouldn't be putting my life if I hadn't gone through that. You know, and that girl called me up not too long ago, and she's still sober 3 years now. And she said, "Scott, you saved my life." She said, "Not only did you have the strength to stay away from me, because this girl's beautiful, and she's funny, and she was everything." She said, "But you, the way you guys live, and the way you treated me, I wanted that, and you gave me the courage to be honest with you." And I know I didn't save her life, but maybe I had a part of God reaching her, you know, by practicing these principles, you know. And that business, and it doesn't even matter. I kept coming back to Alcoholics Anonymous and doing what I had to do here, in pain sometimes. And that business has he didn't leave with that money, I would not be where I am today. I can't tell you the exponential growth that has happened in the last 2 years. It blows my mind. I have a staff that I love, that I trust, that has said to me, "Scott, you can go travel the world. We have it," and empowers them to make decisions. But I love that business, and I want to be around it. So I come home, but the point is that business has grown in the last 2 years. As a business, we're probably 60% more profitable than we were 2 years ago. And that's not what it's about, but that's just numbers. And that gives us more chance to help people, you know. So it's an amazing thing. This big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, I don't worship it. You know, I'm not attached to it. There was a time when I was. So that allows me not to have to defend it. That allows me not to have to think that you have to do it. I'm free from that. I know what it has done for me in my heart. And I love the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. But I don't forget what it's saying, what it's pointing to. It's not the form or the mechanics, it's the force. It's pointing me to God. It's pointing to me to who I really am, my true self. And you have given me that. We just started a home group called the Miracle Group, and Thursday night was our first meeting. It's about 15 enthusiastic people in AA who love AA and give reverence to the history of AA, and we want to build something really special. And then a couple of the definitions of miracle are any work done by God. And another definition is when the impossible becomes possible. You guys, AA, and God have made my life possible. And I thank you for that. And I hope I never forget what Bill Wilson writes in a long form of the 12th tradition. The last line he writes is this to the end: "May our great blessings never spoil us. that we shall forever live in thankful contemplation of Him who presides over us all. I love AA. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm.